The Irish Times Business Podcast in association with Irish Life.
We're here to support your company and your employees now and in the future. We know Irish Life. We are Irish Life.
Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock, a podcast from the Irish Times. Later in the show, Mark Paul of the Irish Times and Larry Bass of Shine Will Productions discuss RTE's plea to the government for €55 million a year in additional funding to support its public service broadcasting remit. Should Pascal Donoghue grant such a large increase in next month's budget, or should RTE just simply cut its cloth to suit its measure? But first, Peter Hamilton joins me in studio to run through some of the major business stories of the week. Peter, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Ciarán.
And we are going to start with the Bernard Shaw pub in Dublin, which is going to close next month.
That's right. That is why. Closing in October, the one in Portobello, people may be familiar with it. So we don't exactly actually know why, but I suppose one of the key, what appears to be the key reason is an issue to do with planning. Last month, On Board Planola refused permission for on the Bernard Shaw to operate its beer garden and its extensive dining area. And that was obviously a big issue for them. They have a significant smoking / beer garden area out the back where they also have this bus.
This is the Eat Yard, is it?
Exactly, the Eat Yard.
And they have the double-decker bus and they serve pizza and whatever else.
All very cool and all very hipster. So
there's murals around the site and so forth.
Yeah.
For people who aren't familiar with it.
Yeah, exactly. So as I said, there it is. Quite a kind of hip place.
That's kind of place I would imagine you'd hang out, Peter.
I don't know how hip I am, but I suppose the thing was...
What's the pint of Guinness like in there?
I've only been there once and it was some time ago, so I don't know. I can't necessarily remember, but I suppose the thing was there. It had a fairly big following and there was quite an outpouring of grief.
I've seen it described as iconic.
Yeah, that seems... Perhaps like a stretch for a business that's been in operation for 13 years. But look, it was very successful and profitable. €622,000 is what it made in profit last year. And, you know, I suppose that clearly is a sign of its following. Hosier was among those who paid tribute to it and said that without interesting places like these, the city loses its heartbeat. We've yet to find out really from the owners what they think of it. They haven't spoken publicly beyond this Facebook post where they said it was out of their hands and they thanked their landlords. But look, I suppose that the key of where it is, it sits on a site.
It's quite a large site, actually.
It's a large site and the Bernard Shaw is at the front of that and it's kind of key to unlocking the site. So I suppose that appears to be why On Board Planola denied them permission recently, and one would have to speculate now that site is going to be developed.
Right, okay. Now, there's a new iPhone on the way. Sadly, they won't be able to use it in the Bernard Shaw in future, but Ciara O'Brien was on the west coast of America. She was there for the press conference. She got to touch and feel this new iPhone iteration. Tell us what it's all about, what it's going to mean for consumers.
Well, one thing that was interesting to begin with was that Apple appears now to have hit its price ceiling with this new iPhone. The new iPhone 11 we're on now, the Pro starts at €1,179, while the Pro Max is €1,279. These new phones, what's interesting about them, they're following in the footsteps of some of their competitors like Huawei and Samsung, and they're adding in more cameras. There's three cameras now on the back of this new iPhone.
Well, it's not foldable, because some of the rivals have gone into foldable.
That's right. So this isn't foldable, but it has three cameras, so enhancements with these ultra-wide lenses. The front camera has also been improved. The display has been improved. It's more waterproof. It is simply better. I don't know how innovative it is compared to previous models, but it is an improvement. The battery life, which people will be very glad to hear, I'm sure, has improved by up to 5 hours in the case of some.
But still,
models.
Would you spend €1,200 or €1,300 on a new iPhone?
I suppose I would consider it if I was getting it through bill, which very often people are. I think I probably would consider it. I currently have an iPhone, which I've had now for more than 3 years. It's served me quite well. I'm quite used to it. So I suppose some people stick with what they're used to and some people get sick of one operator and move to another. And I suppose we've seen that with Samsung and Apple in the past where people have moved. But look, the thing is there are entry level models now still with Apple, which are cheaper and people can get cheaper models to begin with. And if they want to become lifelong fans.
It's not all just about the iPhone, because they've introduced the 7th generation iPad as well.
That's right, their 7th generation iPad. It's going to cost $329. This comes with a bigger screen at 10.2 inches. The aim here is to get people to use this instead of a laptop, something Apple have been trying for some time now, and they've added some improvements so you can use USB sticks and things like that. So again, an improvement rather than extremely innovative. What is perhaps innovative are these new services and this new streaming platform that's going to compete with Netflix and Disney and the likes. They have significantly undercut those on price at €4.99 a month, and they're going to start releasing shows from this November, 1st November.
What is Apple Arcade?
Apple Arcade is a gaming... It's Apple's new gaming platform, which is also €4.99 a month. So these are, as I say, to take down those competitors. And what's interesting is if you buy an iPad, an iPhone or a Mac, you get a year's subscription included. So it is really throwing down the gauntlet to the likes of Netflix.
Okay. Any sense of what we get on Apple TV? Because we kind of know what we get on Netflix or Amazon Prime even.
Well, we know, for example, that they've spent $6 billion on content. So they are going to start releasing shows per month. One of the programs is a Jennifer Aniston, Steve Carell program, which reflects a newsroom, so it might be popular to us journalists. That is one original piece of content that we are going to get. I don't know what sort of back catalogue or films we're going to get, but there is set to be some new content given the size of their budget.
All right. Okay. Talking about budgets, that's a nice little segue. Budget 2020, of course, coming up next month. Pascal Donoghue will be announcing tax cuts and spending measures he has in his mind. And there has been a flurry of pre-budget submissions released in the past few days. Tell us about those, Peter.
That's right. He doesn't have quite as much leeway as Apple, but one of those budget submissions you spoke about was the American Chamber of Commerce. They called on the government to prioritise income tax cuts in the budget despite this Brexit threat. This comes just after Pascal Donoghue says that he's going to prepare this forthcoming budget on the basis that there will be a no-deal Brexit on October 31st. So I suppose this allows him to be quite prudent, perhaps constrained in the budget. It appears likely that any giveaways will be constrained and that this budget is going to stress caution. The state's fiscal watchdog, the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, has warned again that Brexit could leave a fairly significant hole in the government's budget. And as such, in the event of a no deal, government now is expected to not cut spending or to raise taxes, but instead to increase borrowing. That's what we expect at this point in time. The minister is to update us, so all could change in advance of budget day.
Yeah, now, the Fiscal Advisory Council has been warning about the budget and our fiscal prudence for a number of years, and the government generally doesn't take any notice of it.
That's right. They tend to ignore it, and particularly where their warnings on corporation tax are concerned. They have consistently said that the government should not use corporation tax to fuel spend increases or overruns. And again, IFAC noted that we have significant spending overruns in health this year. These need to be pulled back, they say, because it's a bigger problem coming down the line.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, all will be revealed on October 8th, which is Budget Day. Peter Hamilton, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ciarán.
We're going to take a short break now. When we return, we'll be talking about RTE and its finances, and I'll be joined by Mark Paul of the Irish Times and Larry Bass of Shine Will Productions. Back in a few moments.
Only 29% of us know how much we need to live on in retirement. Irish Life is changing that with Empower, a new approach to company pensions that helps change the way your employees think about their future. For more, go to irishlifeempower.ie or talk to your pension consultant. We know Irish Life. We are Irish Life. Irish Life Assurance PLC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. All information source for Irish Life, June 2015.
Welcome back. This is Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock. Now, last week it emerged that RTE's Director General, Dee Forbes, sent a memo to staff telling them to expect cutbacks in the short to medium term as the station could no longer afford to continue on its current scale. Then the Sunday Independent reported that RTE had made a plea to its regulated Broadcasting Authority of Ireland for an additional €55 million a year in funding from the government to plug its financial shortfall. This, of course, comes on the eve of Budget 2020, where the Minister for Finance will reveal any spending increases to RTE or TG Cahir. And RTE has made a loss of seven of the past 10 years, it's worth remembering. So is such an increase in funding justified? Early this week, Mark Paul of the Irish Times gave his view on RTE's plea for additional funding, and he joins me in studio. I'm also joined by Larry Bass, who is the founder and is the head of Shine Uile Productions, one of the country's leading independent production companies, and somebody who knows the inner workings of RTE and the broadcasting sector very well. Mark, first, outline to us the difficulties that RTE are currently facing.
Well, as you said yourself, Kieran, RTE has ran a deficit in 7 of the last 10 years. That would have been 8, except for 1 year in 2017. It sold a slice of its land out in Montrose for 107 million euros. It's running a deficit of about 13 million, I think, last year, 2018. Its most recent figures that have been published. The government has given RTE an extra 8.6 million, I think, for 2019. But the sort of mood music around RTE now is that they are finalising a menu of cuts to be brought forward sometime in October. Really what RTE had sought from the government was to replace the licence fee with a sort of an unavoidable broadcasting charge. And the government has, in principle, agreed to do that, but it's delayed it for 5 years. And this has caused great consternation in RTE, who obviously would look to this as a means of plugging the gap now. So RTE is really in a bind, and unfortunately for RTE and for a lot of the people that work there and a lot of the people that depend upon RTE and for their livelihoods, it seems that the organisation is gearing up for yet another major round of cuts. And it's done this many, many times over the last 15, 16 years.
Yeah, Larry, you know RTE pretty well. You've been selling programmes or being commissioned to make programmes for RTE for many, many years. What's your view on this? I mean, 55 million euro a year, that's a lot of money.
It's the age-old story of the land of a thousand cuts. You know, it's literally been going through cuts after cuts after cuts in terms of its income, its revenue streams. It doesn't help itself by the way it manages the resources it has got. But you can't continue to make things today the same as you did you know, last year or the year before, with less and less money. Whether you're baking a cake, you know, getting on a bus, flying in an airplane, going to a hospital, buying a slice pan, you don't do it for less and less and less and less every year. Yet you're expected to make television programmes every year for less. The independent sector, which depends on largely RTE for its income across all of the independent sector, a legislation piece, there's a minimum spend. The minimum spend is 40 million euro out of all of the licence fee that's collected. RTE are regulated to spend that. There was a time when they were spending 82 million euro in the independent sector. So the independent sector's cut has been over half the income that it was getting. And now it's going to go down even further. And that's only one part. But I think it's completely unsustainable. You're now going to start seeing services disappear. Which ones are going to cut first? Who knows? Will they cut the Irish language? Will they cut the regional services? Will they cut correspondence? Will they cut out news? Will they sell off parts of it? You know, it really is going to have to shrink just to stay alive. And that's our national broadcaster that reflects our everyday life, our everyday culture, language, and it's part of who we are.
Now, you've worked with RTE. There would be a perception in media land, I must say, that RTE is an organisation with a lot of fat that it could cut, it could remove. What's your view?
Like, I think a lot of establishments that have been around for over 50 years probably were established at a different time and probably do need to be re-established and go through a process of change. And there's probably change required in lots of things. You look at the health service, you know, RTE is no different. I think it probably is not fit for the purpose that it needs to be moving into 2020 and beyond. It is set up in 1961. And there are probably lots of inherited problems that need addressing. But fundamentally, they're tweaking things and their change of work practices and things that will automatically and will have to happen, or people just won't survive in a modern world. And I think there are significant changes going on in there. But the cuts are coming harder and the revenue is coming much faster than any of the tweaks that are happening. For example, you mentioned the land sale. You know, the land sale is 107 million. of which they get about 90 because the cost of sale. But that money can only be ring fenced for capital spend. Can't go into programming, can't go into wages and salaries. So it's not going to plug any of the gap in terms of where the deficits are.
No, but it can help it modernise its facilities and its services, which in turn...
I would sell the whole block. I'd move everything out somewhere south of Naas, and I'd get even more funds out of it and start again and say, this is the new broadcaster. This is what it needs. These are the criteria it needs to fill. These are the people it needs to do the particular jobs and start again. That's what I'd do. I'd turn it into a publisher-broadcaster. I wouldn't have it doing any production except news and current affairs. But I'm not the person who's running RTE. But one thing I do know is if it's not funded and if you watch it die gradually as it is, it will die. And in today's world, in the media landscape that we all live in, it's going to disappear really rapidly. It's already seen its share of audience drop in a much faster decline than it's ever had in the previous 10 years, in recent years.
Yeah, now some of that's down to the kind of inevitable fragmentation that's taking place in the world we live in nowadays. You know, people are tuning into Netflix, Amazon Prime, we've Apple TV coming down the track, $4.99 a month.
And the reason why people will sign up to Apple TV or Netflix or Amazon is they'll sign up because they're getting good quality content. If RTE can't afford quality content, it's dead in the water. End of story, new paragraph.
Yeah. Can I just put to you, I mean, the RTE staff are well paid, aren't they? On average. I was doing some number crunching.
But again, this is the old flog the horse. Well, hold on a second.
If you look at the BBC, right, in 2018, the average cost per employee at the BBC was £66,000 or €74,000. If you boil it down to just salaries and wages, take out pensions and social welfare and all that kind of stuff, the figure falls to £48,000 or €54,000. If you take RTE, the comparable figure per employee, including everything, is £81,500. That's 10% higher than the BBC. And if you just strip it down to salaries and wages, take out the pensions and all of that where you can have differences, the difference is it's a 24% difference with the BBC. And they've 1,822 staff. I mean, that's a big gap between the BBC. And the BBC is widely recognised as being probably the best public service broadcaster in the world.
Sure is. It also gets £2 billion a year from its licence fee. And it has a range of services that, you know, they're similar, but there are differences. So I think like-for-like comparison is not quite correct. Sure, and I do believe there are many parts of people in RTE probably paid too much. They're certainly paid more than they are in the independent sector, that's for sure. And people who work in the independent sector who then go on to work in freelance capacity in RTE get more when they're working in RTE than in the independent sector. So there is a difference. And these things are the things that need to be fixed. But fundamentally, you know, they're tweaking where you're looking at an avalanche of revenue disappearing. If you don't have the content...
That's actually not... I mean, sorry to cut across you, Larry. Yeah. That's actually not correct in terms of the last 5 years. RTE's overall top-line revenue has increased by €11.5 million. More than half of that accounted for by licence fee. Yeah.
And in fact, if you look at the licence fee revenue last year, you'll see they made €189 million. They received €189 million licence fee revenue compared to €186 million in the previous year. So that was a €3 million gain licence fee.
RTE's financial difficulty. I mean, I'm a journalist. I work in the media sector. I want to see as many people employed in the media sector as possible and paid as much as they possibly can because it's good for all of us. But objectively, looking at the numbers in RTE, since 2013, when it sort of financially stabilised from its last crisis, its revenues have actually increased over those 5 years steadily by €11.5 million. But its pay costs have increased by €20 million. Now, there's the cause of your deficit right there. Now, I'm not saying, you know, I don't want to see people sacked from RTE. I don't want to see people's wages cut in RTE. But it is an objective fact that its pay bill is what's causing its difficulties. And it is an objective fact that RTE's revenues are rising, not falling.
And there are legitimate reasons as well. There are national pay agreements that an organisation like RTE, that is a semi-state, have to adhere to. But I think there are inevitable cuts coming. Now, whether the RTE trade unions will take that, you know, line down, or... You know, there will be industrial action to protect pay claims. They're also sitting on huge pension costs. So there's lots and lots of parts of it. That's why I'd say I would look at a date sometime down the future and say, that's when the new organisation is going to be set up. This is what it needs to do, and here's what you'd have to do to fix it.
I completely agree with you. And I also would agree with you that RTE should sell the rest of Montrose, the remaining 23 acres or whatever it is, lock, stock and barrel, and move somewhere out to Blanchardstown or City West or whatever it might happen to be. I mean, it's, you know, you talk about a date in the future to reset RTE.
I think Larry wants to put them in Kildare.
In Kildare or Kildare, yeah, somewhere down past Naas, wherever it happens to be, somewhere with easy access to Dublin, of course, because they will be, you know, obviously they need to be close to the capital city for a lot of...
You need a studio in the city centre to do some, you know, political reporting, for example, up in Leinster House, but you don't necessarily need to be in the city.
In fact, they do have studios in Leinster House.
Yeah, but you know, they'll probably need, if you're moving everything out and you couldn't bring, you know...
They probably need a new studio.
Yeah, you need a new studio probably in town. But that's all part of what you would set up to actually fully reflect what a new organisation would need. In fact, you probably have even better regional studios right around the country if you had the resources to capital invest, because the cost of setting up a studio scenario today versus when they were setting it up back in the day...
Sure.
Look who we're sitting in today.
Larry, in 2017, you argued that the licence fee should be doubled.
Yep.
It's currently €160. There hasn't been an increase, I think, since the beginning of 2008. Now, if it's doubled, that goes to €320. That's going to be a bitter pill for a lot of people to have to swallow. It's obviously, I mean, if you take, you know, people with low incomes and so forth, it'll be pretty difficult. And it's hard to see any government... agreeing to an increase of that sort.
So you're now getting me onto one of my hobby horses. This is the country that decided that we don't have to pay for water and we don't have to pay for rubbish collection, and obviously now people feel they don't have to pay for television. But the same people who don't believe they don't have to pay for television are probably paying Sky €70 to €100 a month for Sky. And you'll find that in the demographics of people who will retain and pay for Sky or another cable, Virgin Media, are probably come from some of the most socially deprived parts of the country, because television is one of the vehicles that people will spend their last dime on. You can go around the Horn of Africa where people can't afford a house, but they have a satellite dish because they want to entertain themselves.
Yeah, mind you, it might be illegally plugged into the electricity system and so forth. But anyway, I take your point. Listen, Pat Kiley and Virgin Media TV out in Ballymount, he's working off a much smaller budget than RTE, but they're probably punching above their weight. He certainly thinks they are. And he, you know, he would argue that RTE has a public service broadcast remit, no problem about that. But it shouldn't be in the business of paying big money for sports rights, for example. That should be left to the private sector.
And Pat would love to have all the sports rights to himself, and he's gobbled up a fair few of them. And RTE has not got the same amount of sport that he used to have. But it is still commissioning a huge amount of Irish content. RTE1 is primarily all Irish content. Unlike Virgin Media, that has an output deal. In fact, they're ITV's biggest customer in the world. So most of the output on Virgin Media is not Irish. And any of the Irish content they have, the large majority of it is their in-house studio-based content. And it's got a hell of a lot better since Pat took over the reins and is running Virgin Media. And they're investing now in high-quality premium drama. And I hope they invest even more. And you will see the numbers they get for watching that for Irish audiences will go way higher than anything they can get from anything they buy and acquire from around the world. And that's the fundamental difference and reason why you need money for content. Irish people want Irish stories. Irish children should have Irish stories, but they don't.
Should TG Carr are looking for extra money as well. And they're warning that some of their Irish language broadcasting is going to have to be curtailed if they don't get extra funding. Should they get more money too?
You know, you have to decide, do we want a language? Do we want to actually resource and give equal parity to the Irish language as we do to English language? Content costs money. Yeah. It's simple as.
Now, I mentioned you guys are among the, you know, the biggest independent production companies in the country, and you've a long list of shows that have done very well, thinking of The Apprentice, Dragon's Den, Dancing with Stars, etc. In terms of RTE and in terms of the work you do for RTE annually, how much work are you doing for RTE?
At the moment, RTE are only customer. We're not doing anything for Virgin Media in Ireland. We are in, we set up a scripted division 5 years ago. Very reason we set it up was we were watching our world really shrink in terms of the available budgets to do the shows like the ones you've mentioned. Dragon's Den ran for 8 years. And every single year, the budget of that show was reduced by 7%. That's the way we watched the cuts happen. And eventually it came to a point where, you know, it was over. And The Apprentice was launched at a time when the Irish economy was booming. And we watched the economy slide. It was a show that was primarily funded through product placement and sponsorship.
Of course, that was on TV3 as well.
And, you know, we've seen a cycle of available funds to make high quality programs that could be compared with the best of the UK output. So we're always benchmarked against what's on BBC or ITV or Channel 4. That's why Irish content is actually, for the money that's spent in Ireland, is very high quality. If you look at French TV, German TV, Italian TV, where they've got way more money to invest, the quality of the content is much lower because they've got language to protect them. So we don't have that. We're up against some of the best. I believe UK TV is far superior than even the US TV, with the exception of some of the studio output in drama. General television in the US, in network television, the quality is pretty mediocre.
Yeah, it can be hard to watch, all right, whenever you visit the US. Mark, would you be prepared to pay more on a licence fee?
I think the difficulty with doubling the licence fee for RTE from €160, I know it's just an idea, double, like, you know, you want an increase, but if you were to double it from €160 to €320, Ireland would be an outlier in Europe in terms of the cost of our licence fee. Only the Scandinavian countries.
I think Switzerland as well. Interestingly,
like in Italy, it's €90.
In the past year or 18 months...
Not a lot of people pay it in Italy.
In the past year or 18 months, they had a referendum in Sweden on the...
In Switzerland,
on the licence fee, and they voted to keep it. Although they reduced the cost, I think it was over €400, they reduced it. But nonetheless, they voted to keep it, which was interesting.
But like, Ireland would be an outlier in terms of the UK, where I think it's £154 for a colour TV licence. It's much less than that if anyone's got a black and white telly still.
But again, you know, it's a country of over 60 million people.
Sure.
So it's that's the problem when you're looking at a country of this size and scale.
But there's a social contract there with people. Like, I mean, what RTE have sought is for a licence fee based upon televisions to be replaced with an unavoidable broadcasting charge. And there are very strong arguments for that.
But maybe in 5 years' time.
Maybe in 5 years' time. But that's people, then, it doesn't matter if you own a TV or not, it effectively turns it into a tax, right? And RTE would like it to be tacked on to utility bills, so that is completely unavoidable. If you were to do both of those things and double the licence fee as well, I think the contract between RTE and Irish people would change somewhat. I mean, like, that's a lot to ask for people to bear, especially in an era like RTE has been through lots of financial crises. And I think that's one of the reasons why the government is looking at it now and saying, guys, sort out your own problems. We're not just going to keep dipping into the pocket. I know the licence fee hasn't been increased since 2008, but RTE had a massive financial crisis in 2002, 2003. It had another one in 2009. It stabilised for just 2 years, 2013 and 2014. And here we are, it slid back into this mess again. And it's you know, again, it's its cost base that has caused it its troubles. That's arguably, its cost basis causes all its troubles. Not revenue problems, but cost problems.
Yeah. Larry, you're a businessman. You've been in business now for a long time. And there are some harsh economic realities at play here as well. They're looking for an increase of €55 million a year. That's like 1/6 of their current income. I mean, that's just not going to happen. There's no government is going to give them that kind of money.
And they're going to have to cut costs, which means they're going to have to cut services, which means that the Irish public will have less for the licence fee that they are paying. Even if you collected the licence fee off the people who should be paying it, you would generate over half that money. Mm. We have a system at the moment that's so broken.
The contract has been put out to tender. It's been held
for five years before they're going to do anything about it. Mm. That's what they've actually said. Now, you know, any government policy, if you wait 5 years to do anything, you know, can you just imagine if you, you know, did any crisis that the country is looking at. And this is a crisis. It might be a very high priority crisis in some people's books, but it is a crisis. You know, if you looked at, you know, fixing the homeless crisis or the health service or education, Brexit, and said, let's just wait and see and do something in 5 years. I mean, it's the classic case of kicking the can as far down the road as you possibly can. And for me, what's going to happen is RTE will disappear. It'll get so non-consequential because it'll have no money to do high-quality programming. Nobody will be watching it. And The people who will miss it most are the politicians of the day.
That's a pretty apocalyptic scenario, though. I mean, it's hard to imagine an Ireland, a modern day Ireland without RTE. I mean, I take your point about they're going to have to cut back on some services, but nonetheless, people still tune into the Late Late in their droves every Friday evening. They still tune into. They still tune in to up for the match, let's say, on the eve of an All-Ireland final. That format hasn't changed, I'd say, ever. They still tune in very
Rose
large...
Tralee.
In Rose Tralee, in very large numbers to Radio 1 every morning, even though some of the personalities have changed over the years. I mean, nothing much has changed on that front. The audiences are still great. They're still fantastic. They still got the lion's share of the audience in Ireland.
Yeah, but RT2 is struggling badly. And RT1 is at different parts of its schedule not competing. There are highlights. We do Dancing with the Stars. It's working very well. Room to Improve works very well. Fair City works very well. The Main Even News works very well. So there's lots of peaks and troughs within the schedule. But if it's going to sustain, if it's going to attract more commercial revenue and be able to be a functioning business, it needs to A, arrest the decline in its audience share. B, it needs to fix its cost base. And C, it needs to have the type of revenue to make content that compete with the best in the world, at least as good as the competition. So if your competition is Virgin Media, that's getting the ITV output and what it can afford itself, Netflix, Sky, these are some of the biggest and most powerful, content. I won't call them broadcasters because they're not anymore. Content operators in the world with the biggest budgets in the world. And some of those shows are made here, but they're made for global audiences.
Yeah, Mark?
RTE has one really, really, really difficult problem facing it over the next 6-7 weeks. Whenever this review and this menu of cut options comes out, and here's where I'd sort of swing in behind Larry in terms of, I do think it's a big threat to its programming budget. Last year, RTE sought about 300 voluntary redundancies. It only got about 140 or 150 voluntary, right? So if they go back in for cuts again, and if it's headcount reductions and they can't get the numbers on a voluntary scheme, they don't have the cash to pay for a more attractive voluntary scheme. The question arises, would a state or a semi-state organisation even dare to go near compulsory redundancies? I don't think that's possible for RTE. I don't think it's possible. I don't think any of the trade unions, whether they're RTE unions or not, any trade unions with employees in any semi-state business, they'd all row in behind RTE. They could never allow that principle of compulsory redundancies to come in. You would never have compulsory redundancies in a state company. It would be a sea change in industrial relations in this country. So if they can't get the numbers voluntarily, maybe there are some ugly decisions coming for RTE's programming budget. You would fear for its output in that sort of a scenario. But it's a really, really difficult conundrum facing the organisation. And again, we go back to this huge asset they're sitting on and probably worth 200 million, what they're sitting on out in Montrose. They had 33 acres. I think they sold about 9 acres, sort of, whatever that is, quick maths, 23, 24 acres left. Sell that to property developers, providing it's not too late to do it. Go somewhere out beyond the M50, build a brand new digitally focused organization from the ground up with the sort of studios you need and built with the sort of efficiencies that you need in mind. Instead of sprawled across this old 50-something-year-old campus in Dublin 4, hope that reduces your cost base and just try and begin some sort of a new era for RTE.
Yeah,
and that'll, be part of the start of, revitalising it. But it'll still need, on an annual basis, a budget for content that can compete in a much richer field of content.
Yeah, the extent to which I suppose it must or it should be paid from public funds to compete. I mean, there's probably varying views in that. I understand. I mean, you're a program maker. I don't know how to make television programs. You want to make the best in the world and compete with the best in the world. But, you pointed out that we're only a small country of 5-odd million people. Is it feasible? You often hear in Ireland, we should be the best in the world, this and the best in the world, that. Is it feasible for a country of 5 million people to produce a swathe of original content that stands up with stuff produced by HBO, by BBC, by some of the biggest broadcasting organisations in the world?
Well, we do. Yeah. And there's many shows that Irish you know, programs that are exported around the world, and they do stand up in different genres. You know, our news and current affairs output, we're one of the few countries in the world where you still have a high quality news and current affairs in prime time because it's so good. And Irish people are well served.
And you'd have to think that programs like that would be protected in any sort of a cuts. But then you kind of think about where would the axe fall? Where would the cuts fall in RTE if they were doing it? I mean, if Dee Forbes has to make these cuts, where is she going to make them?
You know, they've two orchestras. They've got.
They've been trying to get rid of the orchestras for years. They sort of gently nudged them out the front door for years, haven't they? I mean, what about the top 10 earners? Because you know, everybody looks at that. There's a
Market forces should define salaries, and a lot of the ones that get rolled out every year as the top 10 or the top 20 or whatever. A lot of them are contracted employees rather than employees of RTE. But right across the whole spectrum of people who earn their living in RTE, whether you're an employee or a contractor, you know, market forces will dictate and should dictate what people get paid. One thing's for sure, there are very few people working in the independent sector who would ever come near any of the salaries that are
absolutely
advertised.
I mean, who is going to poach Ryan Tubby or pay him more than RTE are paying him, or Ray Darcy or Joe?
You'd be surprised. There was an uproar years ago when Pat Kenny, who was earning a hell of a lot more than Ryan
Tubby. And RTE have done just fine without him. Sean O'Rourke has done just fine in that slot, and the audience has held up very
what's
nicely.
Sean paid for this year, and if he went to Today FM, you know, what would that do for them? Or if he went to News Talk or whatever. Who knows where people
go. Sure, but
go.
I think News Talk's in a different place now than it was when it poached Pat Kenny. I don't think they're going out with those kind of checks anymore. But just, we've got to wrap up this conversation. I want to talk to Larry on a couple of quick things. First of all, do you think they'll get a licence fee increase in the budget, or some additional funding?
No, I think unfortunately the can's been kicked down the road, and you're going to continue to see a slide in services and cuts coming. And I think you could see, you know, for the first time in a long time, industrial action in RTE. And, you know, whilst you may have had industrial action in lots of services in Ireland in the bad old days of the 70s and 80s, you know, whether it was the ESB or RTE, we did have strikes in semi-states. But today, if you have a strike and you're off air, you're not going back on air and you're not going to get that audience back.
Yeah. Finally, Sinn Féin, I think, is 20 years old this year. What's new with you guys?
Drama.
What are you working on at the minute?
We've just wrapped on a drama series. It's our first drama series. It's a show called Miss Scarlet and the Duke. It's for A&E Networks, for a US network, in co-production with a company in Los Angeles called Element 8. So it's a story of a private eye in Victorian London, all shot in and around Dublin and Ardmore Studios.
All right. I think I might have seen some of the shooting. Was it off Pearse Street?
We did a bit off Pearse Street. We were up in King's Inn. We were in Henrietta Street.
I thought I'd walk back in time. I was walking down the street and there was this set.
Dublin is a fantastic location for period drama because, you know, people forget that Dublin was the second city of the empire. If you wanted to actually shoot something in Victorian London today, it doesn't exist anymore. So it's actually, we're bring it on. Ripper Street was here. Right. Penny Dreadful was here. So,
and this new drama, what's your budget for it?
I couldn't possibly divulge.
You can tell us anything now, Larry. You know that. You can tell us absolutely anything.
It's not cheap. But it's not, you know, as expensive as some of the really, really big Sky or HBO shows. It's a very big budget for European standards, but it, you know, period drama is hugely expensive. The great thing about it is every single dollar has been spent here in Ireland. There was, you know, a couple of hundred people working on that show for nearly 20 weeks. You know, the costumes are all handmade by a fantastic costume team here. You know, everything from hair, makeup, the sets, any of the built architecture we're using with, you're the build all around it. So your craftspeople working on getting that ready for weeks and months. You know, Ireland, as part of Creative Ireland, which is a government initiative, the fourth pillar is to make Ireland a centre of excellence for film and television content. It's a huge opportunity to build a business that is a global business. The funny thing is, in all of the recession talk, in all of the years, the one sector in the world that's continued to grow is entertainment. So no matter how bad recession has been, with growing populations in the world, with more income being generated by more jobs right around the world, people want to spend more on entertainment. And thankfully, film and television is still one of the areas people want to spend it in.
But is there not an awful lot more dross being made? Not your programmes, obviously. But Netflix have such a huge appetite for content, and Apple now will have, I think it's $6 billion or something they're going to spend. Amazon Prime are spending a fortune. That's in addition to BBC and HBO and all the usual players in the market. I mean, it can't be all good content. There must be an awful lot of
Change is coming. And that's why I passionately want to support Irish content. All of those over-the-top platforms, Amazon, Disney Plus, Hulu, Netflix, HBO, they're all American, you know.
But you get to watch stuff from all over the world that you'd never get a chance to watch otherwise. So I just finished watching an Israeli series about Haredi Jews called Shtizel, which has been a world hit. An amazing show, absolutely brilliant. You know, before Netflix and all of these kind of platforms, you never would have gotten a chance to sort of have that sort of a cultural exchange.
Yeah, and like US audiences would never have watched a show with subtitles before Narcos. Mm. And now, you know, shows from right around the world are getting shown on different channels, mainly cable or OTTs.
I watched a cracking Korean horror movie the other night. Like, you know,
But the issue is they're starting to shrink in terms of what they're actually looking for. And for Irish, you know, stories, if we want our lives to be reflected, if you want your children to be watching Irish stories in the next 10, 15, 20 years, there has to be some resource to pay for it. And that's why, you know, I think we can compete. I think we can do as good as any of the best in the world. But we do need to be able to resource it. And it's not all resource out of here. We have a lot of shows in our slate, some supported by RTE, some supported by Screen Ireland. And we've got French distributors, UK partners. We're going out to a global marketplace to try and fund content, to bring it all back and spend it here. It's a very rich time to be trying to create those types of stories. Irish, you know, music, Irish dance, Irish films have punched way above their weight for centuries. We're a country that has continued its culture through songs and stories, not through the patronage of, you know, wealthy individuals or governments into sculpture or paintings in museums and art galleries like in Italy or UK. For 800 years, we didn't have any investment in our culture, you know, but this country was born out of a Gaelic League who are trying to, you know, protect the language, invest in Irish sport, Irish culture, and we grew a country out of that. And I think the danger is if we don't continue to invest in it, in an English speaking world, it's going to become even more Anglified. In a world that where identity and national identity is critically stretched. If you want to actually really invest in who we are and actually, you know, be part of something, we have to pay for it. And, you know, it is painful, but we can find funding models that work. I said double the license fee, but what I meant was it's so below where it should be. It could justifiably be doubled. I don't expect it to be doubled, but if you keep cutting it by 7 or 10%, year on year, if you look at even not being protected against CPI on all those years, it's effectively just being cut every single year. Yeah. And that's just one part of the funding model.
All right. Well, listen, we'll see where it goes. We'll know on October 8th when Pascal Donoghue announces budget as to whether RTE or indeed TG Car are going to get any money. Larry, we wish you continued success with Shinna Will. My thanks also to Mark Paul. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for this week from Inside Business. My thanks to Peter Hamilton, Larry Bass and Mark Paul. Jennifer Ryan produced the show with JJ Vernon as sound engineer. Remember, you can get the latest business news straight into your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email at irishtimes.com. And you can also follow the Irish Times business feed on Twitter and Facebook each day. I'm Ciarán Hancock. Until next time, take care.